Go ahead and get those Bibles opened back to 2 Samuel chapter 24. Verse number 10 is where we're going to begin in a moment. And also, if you can possibly have two places open at the same time, 1 Chronicles chapter 21, verse 7. This is the story of David's illicit census of his military personnel. I believe it comes during the first half of 982 BC. I think it's hot on the heels of the Absalom coup, the Sheba revolt, the Philistine uprising, the time where David is almost killed trying to put down the Philistine uprising, and his military guys won't let him go out anymore. And David, I think, is feeling, he's feeling weak. He's feeling that he is not in control of things. And this becomes the perfect environment for a major temptation. And you remember between the two passages, 2 Samuel 24 and 1 Chronicles 21, that it would appear that Satan lays out this temptation in front of David, and David bites on it. And David orders that this military census be taken, even though Joab, who is not a very righteous guy himself, we know that, says, it's a bad idea, we shouldn't do it. But David insists, because I believe he thinks knowing this number will make him feel back in control. That's the cycle analyzing that I'm going to do at this point. They get the number. It's 1.1 million in total, probably a little higher than that. We're probably rounding here. Almost half of that comes from the tribe of Judah, the tribe that David comes from. It takes most of a year in order to get this done. And then the problems begin. We are told in 1 Chronicles 21, 7, that God was displeased with this thing and he struck Israel. God intervenes with some punishment against Israel for David's choice here. One of the things that we understand is sin brings consequences, and the sin of leaders bring consequences that impacts on a lot more than just themselves. And so David's sin in ordering this illicit military census brings a lot of consequence to the people of Israel. At this point, I want us to use the 2 Samuel 24 passage. 2 Samuel 24, 10. But David's heart struck him after he had numbered the people. So finally, it dawns on him that this was not the best choice. It's interesting that in the Bathsheba affair, which I think kicks off this whole series of bad outcomes, David went the entire pregnancy without coming to the understanding that what he did was way out of step with God. He was not being the man after God's own heart that he should have been. It wasn't until the prophet Nathan challenges him to think about a parallel situation that David finally snaps out of it. Well, here we are. Apparently, it's about another nine-month period that goes by from the beginning of this sin until David realizes, oh, this is bad. So, David gets confronted again by a prophet. So David says to he who is, I have sinned greatly in what I have done. But now, O he who is, please take away the iniquity of your servant, for I have done very foolishly. Now, I believe that when we were reading in the First Chronicles passage, 21:7, that God struck Israel means that something big happened at the very beginning of David's repentance. That something happened that got his attention, and that we just don't have the details of it. But now David is going to be given further judgment options for what has happened here. So verse 11 of 2 Samuel 24, when David arose in the morning, so this is the morning after David is praying to God, confessing the fact that he's the one that started this sin ball rolling. David arose in the morning, and the word of he who is came to the prophet Gad. The First Chronicles 21 passage says that Gad was David's seer, meaning he was his personal prophet. He was there with him on a regular basis. Now, I wonder where he was at in the choice that David made to do this. I don't know. That would be a good question that I'd love an answer to. But he's here now. That the word of the Lord came to the prophet Gad, David's seer, saying, go, say to David, thus says he who is, three things I offer to you. Choose one of them, that I may do it to you. So Gad came to David and told him. So basically, Gad is given the very sad responsibility, task, to come to the king of the land and say, God is going to punish the nation, you, for what has been done here. But you get to choose how that judgment comes. Three things I offer you, choose one of them that I may do it to you. Shall 3 years of famine come to you in your land? Now, David's already been through a 3-year famine during his kingdom. Remember, we had the whole incident of the Gibeonites had been murdered by King Saul, and I think probably members of his family. And God set in a 3-year famine as judgment, and it was not good. So, do you want to go through that again? 3 years where there's not enough food to go around? Or would you flee 3 months before your foes while they pursue you? So, option one, 3 years. Now, why is the number 3 popping up here? I can't tell you for sure why God chose the number 3. But David might actually understand some significance of the number 3 in this story. So, option one, 3 entire years of people starving. Or, 3 months of you running away from battlefields because I'm not helping you out to fight against the foes of Israel. Or option number 3, shall there be 3 days pestilence in your land? Meaning 3 days that I bring death specifically against people. I pick it. Now, consider, decide what answer I shall return to him who sent me. So, David, I think, ponders upon it a little bit, and then he makes his answer. Verse 14, then David said to Gad, I am in great distress. Now, who wouldn't be? Three choices he has. 3 years of famine, 3 years of bad wars, or 3 months of bad warring, or 3 days of people dying at the hand of God. That's all tough. It's going to be painful no matter how it is. But David says, here's my choice. Let us fall into the hand of he who is, for his mercy is great, but let me not fall into the hand of man. So don't let us suffer from the warfare of other people, the choices of other people against us. Don't let that be it. And don't let the randomness of famine and starvation be the way that people die. Let me fall, let us, because he's making this decision on behalf of all of Israel. Let all of us fall under God's judgment hand specifically, where he chooses who lives and dies. Now, at this point, I want to remind you that this is not just about this illicit military census. I don't think so. Remember, this comes hot on the heels of the nation choosing Absalom over David, probably understanding that Absalom would kill David. So there is a lot of civil war. There is a lot of blue on blue, however you want to describe it, violence and hatred that's gone on. There's already been the fracturing of the society greatly. And a lot of it is tied up in sin, personal sin. And so God is going to hand out judgment against many of the worst actors during this period of political instability. That's my belief. These are the troublemakers that were happening. It's not going to be random. It's God choosing. And that's what David asked for. Verse 15, so he who is sent a pestilence on Israel from the morning until the appointed time. So it starts from the moment that David says, yeah, if we're going to have judgment, let God be the one that decides who dies. So from that morning, for the next 3 days, people are going to be dying. And there died of the people from Dan to Beersheba. So from the northernmost significant walled city to the southernmost significant walled city. That's the same language that got used when they were doing the census, the military census. There died 70,000 men. Now, again, I believe that those that died were likely among those that were numbered. So they are military-aged men, and I believe they were probably complicit in a lot of the turmoil that happened in the Absalom coup. Verse number 16, when the angel stretched out his hand toward Jerusalem to destroy it. Now, this is at the end of the 3 days. It's the climactic moment when God's judgment is coming to its conclusion. So this is the third day. The messenger of God, the destroying angel of God, saves Jerusalem for the end. And as he's stretching out his hand toward Jerusalem to take out even more individuals, the Lord relented from the calamity and said to the angel who was working destruction among the people, "It's enough. Stay your hand." And the angel of He Who Is was by the threshing floor of Araunah, the Jebusite. So here we find out that the angel was coming toward Jerusalem from the north. The threshing floor was on the high point of what we call the Temple Mount today, just north, a few hundred yards from the Palace of David, which was in the northernmost part of the ancient city of David. This place up on the hill was used to process grain. The way you process grain was you threshed it first by running threshing sledges over it, using animals typically, to break the seeds away from the husk and away from the stalks. And then you would get a little tool, a little shovel, that you would use to throw that up into the air, and the prevailing wind going across the hill, across the hilltop, would blow the chaff off to one side, and the heavier grain kernels would drop straight down. So that's why you always wanted your threshing floor to be up on top of a significant hill, which is what the Temple Mount was at this time. Now, it belongs to a guy called Araunah, who is a Canaanite. He's from Jebus, the old name for Jerusalem before David took it over. In the Chronicles passage, his name is Ornan, slightly different, but it's built in the same Israeli word for light. So, David, let me read to you from the Chronicles this time. Let's shift over there. First Chronicles chapter 21, verse 16. David lifted his eyes and he saw the angel of He Who Is standing between earth and heaven, and in his hand a drawn sword stretched out over Israel. So David has his eyes opened to the spirit world. He sees the destroying angel paused up there on the top of the hill, just north of his palace, just a few hundred yards away. And he sees the sword pointing toward the city where he knows that more could die. Then David and the elders, this would be the Sanhedrin probably, the 70 leaders of Israel. They were clothed in sackcloth. They've been clothed in sackcloth the whole 3 days, I am sure, because they are grieving over what's happened, what brought this on. They are fasting, I'm sure, and praying for God's mercy. So they fall on their faces. And David said, "Was it not I who gave command to number the people? It is I who sinned and done great evil. But these sheep, what have they done? Please let your hand, O He Who Is my God, be against me, against my father's house, but do not let the plague be on your people." So David has fully come to his senses now, realizing that choices that he has made as leader have brought great grief and judgment upon his nation. And his plea to God is, "Take me out, not them." This is a humbling moment in David's life, and it is very important to set the tone for his final years of life, because he only is going to live a few years longer after this. So verse 18 of the First Chronicles. Now the angel of He Who Is had commanded Gad to say to David that David should go up and raise an altar to He Who Is on the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. So Gad is the one who passes this information on to David. The angel doesn't talk to David. Gad does on behalf of God. So David went up at Gad's word, which he had spoken in the name of He Who Is. So he leaves his palace. He goes up this hill to what we call, again, the Temple Mount, you know, where the golden dome of the rock is now sitting. That is the location, we believe, of the threshing floor of Ornan. So David walks up that hill, verse 20. Now Ornan was threshing wheat. Now that tells us the time of year it is. It's after Pentecost. So it's the very late spring and the beginning of summer. He turned and he saw the angel, and his four sons who were with him hid themselves. So they had their own experience of seeing the angel of God hovering above their processing area, and they kind of freak out over it. And so then David came to Ornan, and Ornan looked and saw David and went out from the threshing floor, and he paid homage to David with his face to the ground. Now, Ornan, he is a Jebusite. He is Canaanite by his ethnicity. But he seems to be Israeli by his faith, by his religion. And so David said to Ornan, who's on the ground in front of him, showing proper respect for his king, "Give me the site of the threshing floor that I may build on it an altar to He Who Is. Give it to me at its full price, that the plague may be averted from the people." So, Ornan, I need to buy your site here. Tell me what the going rate is. Tell me what the price is. But Ornan said, "Oh, you take it. Let my lord the king do what seems good to him. See, I give the oxen for burnt offerings, the threshing sledges for the wood, and the wheat for a grain offering. I give it all." So Ornan says, "Not only do I want to just donate the property, I want to donate all the material that's up here right now." He'd been, you know, threshing the wheat by running these heavy wooden sledges with probably iron little prongs underneath them, and the oxen have been pulling them across. And so he says, "Take it all. Take the threshing sledges, break them up, use that for your wood. Take the oxen, butcher them, cut them up, use them as the sacrifice, the blood sacrifice to God. And you even take all the grain that's sitting here, and you use that as a grain offering to God as well." So he's all on board with getting things atoned for. But David said to Ornan, and we all love David's response here, I think, "No, but I will buy them for the full price. I will not take for He Who Is what is yours, nor offer burnt offerings that cost me nothing." See, I am not going to end this plague by making an offering to God that cost me zip. I'm the one that needs to be bearing the cost here. I'm the leader. I'm intimately involved with why this is happening. I need to take accountability here. So David paid Ornan 600 shekels of gold by weight for the site. So for the land, this is the price for the Temple Mount that David paid on this day. Now the rule of thumb is add a zero when you're talking about gold when comparing it to silver value. So 600 shekels of gold is roughly the equivalent of 6,000 shekels of silver. And when you figure that each shekel is a couple of days' wages, then we are talking about 12,000 days' wages. Several million dollars worth of buying power here we're talking about. David buys it from his own pocket. And then the Samuel passage tells us that he paid an additional 50 shekels of silver for the animals. So 100 days' wages for the animals and the equipment. And then David built there an altar to He Who Is and presented burnt offerings and peace offerings and called on He Who Is. And He Who Is answered him with fire from heaven upon the altar of burnt offering. So this isn't David igniting it. God Himself shows supernatural acceptance of this sacrifice by sending fire from heaven. That's very important to the story. And then He Who Is commanded the angel, and he put his sword back in its sheath. And so this sin and this time of judgment has come to an end.